Okay, our speaker today is Mehdi Hassanyoussi, who's going to speak about deparameterized models and LQG. Is the speaker there?
Hello, you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here. So this talk will be on the deparameterized models in LQG. It will be mostly a review of the available literature on deparameterized model and their quantization in LQG context. It will not probably be complete, but I hope it will bring some insight. The plan of the talk will be, I'll start with general motivations. And second point will be discussing the classical models and the general setup. I will give a couple of examples also. Third point will be about the quantization in LQG context. And they will discuss the physical Hilbert space and the implementation of the Hamiltonian. And at the end, I will go on more perspective about what we can do next in those models. Then we conclude. So for the motivations, so we know that...
Remember, you have to tell us when to switch the slides.
Okay, thank you. So slide number three, I display a bit list of motivations. So we know that general covariance implies that the dynamics in the theory is encoded in constraints. And in case of general relativity, that basically leads us to a huge difficulty in isolating the true dynamical degrees of freedom. And on the quantum level, it leads actually to conceptual problems in interpreting quantum theory, such as the problem of time, plus technical obstacles in solving the constraints, as we already all know. Now, the deparameterization, in general, introduces a privileged coordinate system where that allows to solve all or part of the constraints. Now, imposing these resolved constraints as operators in the quantum theory yields to a functional Schrödinger equation. In this, at the end of the day, we end up with a clear framework and satisfactory approach actually to tackle the problem of time in quantum gravity, since we choose, we are provided with a coordinate system. And also, we end up with a complete setup to study generic phenomenology of quantum models of gravity coupled to matter fields. And here, what I mean by generic is in the sense that studying some phenomenology that a priori would not depend on this choice of reference field. So next slide, we go to the classical models. So I will start with illustration of the recipe of obtaining a deparameterized model. So you start with a Lagrangian, and then you do the Hamiltonian analysis to obtain a set of constraints, first class and usually also second class. Now, the second class usually needs to be solved in this case. So the solutions obtained from second class are then implemented in the first class constraint, and then you need to rewrite everything in possibly equivalent way to obtain a deparameterization of the constraint. In general, the goal is to deparameterize the scalar constraint in the theory, but also there are models where you can also deparameterize the spatial diffeomorphism theory constraint. Sorry. On slide number six, I present here the general setup with the general action of the model. This part is mostly based on this paper of Giselle and Thiemann, published in 2015. So you have an action S where you have a sum of three parts. The LG is the gravitational part. LR is the Lagrangian of the reference field. And LM, which is Lagrangian of additional matter fields that you would like to consider in your theory, such as, for example, standard model. Now, the general form of LR so far that contains actually most of known models that I will present an example later on is what you see there, LR, where we have three groups of fields. We have the reference fields in blue, P and SJ, with their conjugate momenta P and PJ. Here, those fields intervene in the Lagrangian only in derivative terms, so there is no, we don't consider any potential terms. And this is important for two reasons. On one hand, it allows you to not have a dependence on the reference field in the Hamiltonian. On the other hand, it's also helping guaranteeing that actually your constraints, scalar constraints, can use. And we will see that later in example. The second set of variables are in red. They are Lagrange multipliers, rho and omega j, with their conjugate momenta pi and pi j. And then we have a set of arbitrary functions, a, b, and lambda, that are allowed actually to depend on the field rho. And there is no particular form for those functions. They can be kept arbitrary. Lambda of rho also can be interpreted as some cosmological constant in the model. Now, on the next slide, I show the Hamiltonian analysis. So we have to introduce the left-hand shift with their conjugate momenta. The Hamiltonian analysis leads first to a set of primary constraints. So we have the set of constraints Z, capital Z and small z, that are basically shows the, because in the Lagrangian it is independent of the momenta of left and shift, and it is also independent of the momenta of the field rho and omega j. And then we have an additional primary constraint. Actually, they could be three or two, those chi j, depending actually on a and b. Here, in the sense that those a and b parameterize actually the model, in the sense that you have the cases where they vanish or not vanish, and depending on that, you have either two additional primary constraints or three. And those primary constraints depend on the field P, PJ, and WJ. Now, the stability of those primary constraints implies actually a set of secondary constraints where you obtain this scalar constraint, the spatial disk constraint, and additional constraints. We have S, that is the variation of the total Hamiltonian H total with respect to the field rho, and the constraint K that appears in case actually you have only two chi j constraints, in the sense that the chi j's are not independent in general, and that generates actually another secondary constraint that is here K, and that is the variation of H total with respect to pi 3, that is the conjugate momenta of omega 3. Now, next, you see here I selected in red and green. Those actually, for the constraints in red form a second class constraints group, and the constraints in green also form another set of second class constraints. Then next, you solving those second class constraints plus manipulating the first class constraints C and CA leads to a specific form of the constraints C and CA that are shown here. C equals to T, which is the conjugate momenta to T, the field T, minus a certain function that depends on the first class constraint and possibly the field T. And then we have the spatial diffeomorphism constraint with all its components. Now, at this level, we can say that actually C, scalar constraint, is deparametrized. Now, on the next slide, number 8, in case where H actually, this function that appears in the new form of the scalar constraint, does not depend on the field T, we obtain that the commutator of H is actually vanishing, so the H is commutative. And that's just a consequence of the fact that we have that the T are first class, so they're commutative, and just because we have just this additional dependence on T in space. If H does not depend on T, then H will commute. Okay, the second point is that when you impose the gauge capital T equals the parameter time of time, then we can define the physical Hamiltonian of the theory as being the integral over the spatial slice of this function H. Now, I want to give here a quick word also about observables. So for observables, it just depends on the form, actually, or and the choice of the reference field. So if you introduce this spatial component of the reference field, this S, then actually you can also solve the spatial diffeomorphism constraint by pulling back all tensors and spinners by this defined by those fields, and then you can obtain new pulled back variables for your space, and then any function that depends on those variables is actually spatial diffeomorphic variable. Now in the second case, when actually you don't introduce those coordinates, basically for space, then you end up actually in the more or less in the general case when you have actually to construct the special disinvariant quantities. In any case, at the end of the day, you end up with an equation for evolution for those observables with respect to this chosen time t. That is just a Poisson bracket with the Hamiltonian, and then a variation with respect to the field T, in case there is an explicit dependence of the observable on this field. Now, on the next slide, I'm starting with some examples of the parameterized model. So the first example that would come to mind would be to consider just a massless Kleinbohm scalar field. This case would correspond to setting these functions I told you about, the arbitrary ones A, B, and lambda equal to 0, and setting the parameter rule here equal to 1. The action reduces in the following form that you see. And the constraints are obtained, the constraints will also be have this general form that I showed before, where you have the gravitational part plus the reference field part. And you can, in this case, solve the Hamiltonian constraints using the diffeomorphism. So basically, you replace the terms with that are the spatial derivative of the field T by the by the gravitational this constraint, basically. And you end up with a form, actually, that is usually in general with some squared, but then you solve it depending on regions of the phase space. And you obtain basically four regions that I symbolize here with plus and minuses in different colors. And on the next slide, you can see that actually you can make a choice of a part of, a factor of the state space. Here, the usual choice that is made is the one that includes homogeneous and isotropic geometry coupled to a scalar field. And then you can rewrite the constraint, the scalar constraint, as T, constant momentum to T, minus a certain function H. This H is a positive function that depends only on the usual gravitational constraint, scalar and spatial diffeomorphism. And here, this is an example, simple example of deparametrizing time in this model, while we do not deparametrize the gravitational constraint, the spatial diffeomorphism constraint. Now, imposing the gauge T, capital T equals the time, this actually reduces the form of H to just be dependent on the gravitational, and then your diffeomorphism constraint is just the gravitational part. And we will see later how the quantization, how to proceed with the quantization of such models. Now, next slide is another example. So in this example, I will just show a bit, compare a bit between the rotational dust mole, which is the usual brown Kuhnhardstein like dust, and the irrotational dust mole. So for the rotational dust, you have A equals B equals lambda equals rho. So basically, all the terms that were present in the general action still appear here. Next, you see that the constraints, you have your first class constraints that are CA and C. And then you have a second class constraint, delta plus, plus other second class constraints, actually. The reference field part CAD that appears in CA and also in CA constraints is written there, which is PC, comma A plus PJFJ, comma A. Here, I must also add that actually from the definition of the momenta P, when you go through the Hamiltonian analysis, you obtain that actually the sine of P must be equal to sine of rho, and it is opposite to the sine of the gravitational scalar constraint. And also, you have an additional constraint, actually it's a primary constraint, those chi j's that I mentioned before in the general Hamiltonian analysis, lead actually to this simple form for Pj that is equal to P times omega j. Now, introducing the inverse of Sj, comma A, and rewriting the constraint, first class constraint, we obtain this this deparametrized form of the constraint that I call C time, where we have here a dependence on the sine of P in the scalar constraint. Now, this later, I mean, in general, you can make a choice for the sine of P, and you basically, in that way, you are restricting yourself to some subsector of the phase space in the quantitative theory in this way. But I will discuss later on some difficulties that could come up with respect to the quantization of the Hamiltonian itself when such choices are made. Now, next, you obtain by imposing the gauge T equals time, and then now inserting the coordinates corresponding to Sj, Sj, the dependence of S of the spatial of these constraints on H drops off, and you end up just with the dependence of T and Ca, the gravitational path. And here C prime is the usual form as before. Now, I remind you again that to proceed with the deparametrization for the for space, you just pull back your field with respect to the diffeomorphism generated by this choice of coordinates. Okay. So next, I go to the irrotational dust, where we consider lambda equals rho and A, B vanishes. So basically, the field S is Sj are not considered. The constraints here are, again, similar to the previous one, except that you have this part that does not depend anymore on Sj, so all the terms drop off. You still have this constraint on the sign, again, and maybe it's worth to mention that this actually, this constraint, I mean, it's not necessarily fixed by the definition of momenta unless you insert that actually this dust is time-like, and the fourth vector is future directed. Now, solving the second class constraint delta and using the disk constraints, you obtain the simplified form for the spatial and scalar constraints. Now, here the dependence against scalar constraint, there is no dependence on the gravitation, the spatial deformation of constraints. The gravitational spatial diffeomorphism constraint. So you have just a simple term that is just C GR, where without any square root nor this constraint. While the diffeomorphism constraint is not, there is no presence of the S J, therefore you cannot really use, you don't have coordinates here to deparametrize space. Now, by imposing the gauge again on the next slide, you drop the second term in the spatial constraint, and you are left just with the gravitational spatial constraint. Okay. And with the last example on the next slide, the Gaussian dust mole, The Gaussian decimal, you don't consider the kinetic term for the field Sj, and you impose that the function lambda is just equal to rho. The constraints again are this constraint is similar to what was in the case of the dust, except that here we don't have this. We don't have more. Actually, okay, no. It's similar. It's the scalar constraint where you actually obtain a slight difference in the terms that are generated by the reference field, and you have also configured class constraints, but they are not really worth mentioning. The point is that you follow the general procedure for solving the constraints, and then you implement the solution in the first class constraint. The result is shown below, but again, you can define this, you can write the scalar constraint in the form of P plus a certain function H, and when you impose the gauge in the next slide, this reduces just to the usual form P plus the scalar constraint, the thing that we obtained before for the rotation of that, plus a certain sign, this epsilon, that is present, that comes also from the definition of the momenta, and this constraint that gets again in the form that allows to differentiate space. Okay, so these were basically just examples to show you a bit how it is done, but also it shows how different are the results with respect to the final constraints. What are the possible restrictions that we could obtain in the phase space, and what are the possible simplifications that would be relevant in the quantization, as we will see next. So next, I will go to the LQG quantum model. So I will discuss a bit the quantization in general. So on slide number 14, we find that all the constraints are solved on the classical level, except of the gas constraint. And if you want to use, for example, the Ashiga-Valverde variable on the gravity part, that leads to a reduced phase space formulation for the model with the physical Hamiltonian. Then in the quantum theory, the kinematic and Hilbert space, up to some gas gauge designs, is the physical Hilbert space. This is, of course, in the case where what I call the space-time reference model, where you differentiate time and space, so you don't have any constraints to impose in the quantum level. In the canonical quantization context, there are two possible options for defining the quantum model. So you have the standard-based UG gauge design in Hilbert space as the physical Hilbert space, or the algebraic quantum gravity Hilbert space. And here I wanted to mention just some differences between those two Hilbert spaces. So in the standard LQG Hilbert space, we have an infinite number of embedded graphs. Space is non-separable, and the topology and differential structure is provided. This is an information that is always given and by the graph of the space. On the other hand, in the algebraic quantum gravity, you have your space are based on subgraphs of one infinite algebraic graph. The space is still non-separable, and the topology and differential structure are absent. Of course, this is just comes from the fact that this is an abstract graph. Okay. On next slide, I here present the case of the time reference model. So in this case, the spatial diffeomorphism constraint is not solved classically. Therefore, it must be also implemented in the quantum theory in order to obtain physical space. And again, we have both options, the standard LQG quantization or the algebraic quantum gravity. It's just worth to notice that actually, keep in mind that actually in both cases, the kinematic and Hilbert space must be reduced with respect to the diffeomorphism constraint. This is just to point out that even if you consider the algebraic quantum gravity quantization, you still need to quantize the spatial diffeomorphism constraint and impose it as the quantum constraint on your space. And I will come to that later. Okay. Now we can go to the implementation of the physical Hamiltonian. So on slide number 17, here I would like to discuss a bit the different regularization that are present in LQG. So we have the graph changing option, and then the graph service. So option one, for option one, this regularization helps add the attachment of loop that does not overlap the graph point. In the option, we have to use the regularization.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of noise. We're going to have to start to restart the call. Let's continue the talk.
Okay. So we are in the part, I'm about to start the part about XQG quantum model. So slide number 17, actually it's the talk about implementation of the physical Hamiltonian. So slide number 17, I present here the known regularization of the Hamiltonian in LQG. So we have the graph changing prescriptions versus the graph preserving prescriptions. So what I wanted to say here is that actually when we want to implement the physical Hamiltonian, then it's not always doable with respect to those prescriptions that we have. And I have this table that summarizes actually the options with respect to the model. So in the case of space-time reference model, then you have actually that you solve the spatial disconstraint on the classical level, therefore you don't have any spatial disconstraint in the quantum level, and therefore you cannot actually consider a graph changing regularization for your Hamiltonian, because that would not preserve, that would break the diffeomorphism symmetry that you have. And that's why actually if you take standard LQG as it is, you cannot implement the graph changing regularization. Now for knowing that, you try to use the graph preserving option. However, the graph preserving option comes also with its restrictions with respect to the standard LQG. The problem is mainly that the operator as it is defined must have some restrictions in the Hilbert space, in the kinematic Hilbert space of LQG. That's what I label by LQG fast, meaning that you must introduce some modifications in either in the Hilbert space or in the operator itself by introducing some projectors, and that comes from the fact that actually, even if you consider the graph-preserving Hamiltonian, this operator will not preserve the sub-Hilbert spaces associated to a certain fixed graph. Therefore, you need to either introduce a projector that brings you back every time to the Hilbert space, or you just cut somehow the Hilbert space, make some truncation in the Hilbert space so that you remove all the possible states that would generate this ambiguity, let's say. So if you are fine with these modifications, then you can go with option three, the graph preserving one, which is the only one that you can have in this case. And in the case of, if you go with algebraic quantum gravity quantization, then actually you can either use the graph preserving, the graph preserving option is still valid, but also you can use the graph chain, which is option number two, while actually you cannot use option number one. And this is due to the fact that if you have a Hamiltonian loop defined according to prescription in option number one, it means that you are, upon successive action of this Hamiltonian, you are increasing the balance of the vertex, at the vertex, at each vertex, actually. And it can go to, up to infinity, if you want. And this is not actually compatible with the construction in algebraic quantum gravity when you consider that in the abstract graph, the valence of your vertices is fixed. And that's why this option number one is not compatible with the algebraic quantum gravity quantization. Now, in the case of time reference models, so in this case, you have physical Hamiltonian, and you still have this diffeomorphism constraint. Now, standard LTG, you can go just with the usual quantization of the Hamiltonian, and you solve the distance constraint to the averaging mass to the usual one. And you define the diffeomorphism invariant in this space. And in that case, you can consider option number one as the prescription to regularize your Hamiltonian. However, you cannot use the option two and three. And that's because in case of option two, the problem is that you are unable to define a densely defined Hamiltonian. And that's because basically in the usual quantization, if you go back to the usual quantization of the Hamiltonian, you usually obtain at the end of the day a non-symmetric operator. And then the possibility of symmetrizing this operator, as I will discuss later, for example, is to use the adjoint operator, but in this case of option number two, the adjoint operator is not densely defined on the Hilbert. And therefore, it just doesn't work. Now, if you accept to introduce, let's say, some modification on the Hilbert space, such as the case before where I mentioned that you consider some truncation in the Hilbert space, then you are possibly able to implement option number two and option number one as well, but also option number three, which actually suffers from the same problems that as option number two in this case. And for the case of algebraic quantum gravity, you are actually you have a problem in implementing these operators because remember that we still have the Diff constraint. So you need, on one hand, to implement the physical Hamiltonian plus the Diff constraint. Those can be indeed implemented. However, you end up with so far actually the quantization that is available for the Diff constraint in HTG. Induces an operator that does not commute with the physical Hamiltonian, meaning that your physical Hamiltonian will not preserve your physical Hilbert space in that case. And that's why actually it is an obstacle in implementing this case of time reference model in the algebraic quantum gravity. Now, on the last part, I just wanted to compare actually with the vacuum theory and all the stories about in the first case about the fact that that the adjoint operator in option one, number two, is not densely defined. But in the case of the vacuum theory, we do not require that the Hamiltonian to be symmetric, not as adjoint. That's because of this obstruction that we have with the constraint algebra. And in this case, you just consider the non-symmetric operator, and then all options actually can work. In the case of option one and two, they can be implemented in LQG. For option number three, you always still need to somehow modify, either by introducing the projectors or truncating the Hilbert space. And in AQG, you have option number two and three, but not option number one, as I mentioned before, with respect to this problem of balance, fixed balance in this mode. Okay. So on slide number 18, I discussed this example that I discussed above, actually, presented above. So for the macro scaling borders carelessly, it can be implemented in font type, say, in the standard SVG way, using option number 1 for the Hamiltonian. In the case of this modified LQG, you can actually use all options. And in case of AQG, you can you cannot actually quantize this model in a consistent way, because again, this model belongs to this class of time reference models, and therefore it cannot be implemented in AQG. For Brown-Kuhar's graph, so again, from the previous slide, it cannot be implemented in LQG unless we introduce some modifications, which gives you the possibility to use option number 3 with a certain modification on the Hilbert space. And then option number 3, if you go back to the slide of the Hamiltonian in this model, you can see that there is a term that depends on the gravitational spatial distribution of the strain. And therefore, you are somehow obliged here to go to the master program to implement the operator. And that works very extend as well to the case of AQG, if you want to implement the Hamiltonian, except that additionally you are allowed to use option number 2. For the rotational graph, it's basically the same as fine-grained scalar field. And for the Gaussian graph, here, the Gaussian graph, the difference between this model and the Brown-Kuhar is the fact that we don't have the spatial diffeomorphism constraints in the physical Hamiltonian. Therefore, you can proceed with the standard quantization for the Hamiltonian, and you go with option number 3 in case of this modified LQG, or option 2 and 3 in case of algebraic quantum graph. Okay. So next slide, number 19. Here I just present a bit the concrete quantization of the gravitational Hamiltonian. So mainly here I present the scalar constraint part. So we know that it can be written basically in these two forms. The first line is where we use this explicit curvature, and the second line we use the three-dimensional Ricci curvature. So for the Euclidean part, the EEF, I was quantized as usual using CMAS trick, replacing this singular 1 over square root of the determinant by the Poisson bracket with the volume. Then the curvature is generalized to this homonomy along some certain closed loop. And the loop is assigned according to one of the following, one of these three prescriptions that I described before. Now, in the case where you write this Lorentzian part in terms of the explicit curvature, you are again obliged to use Siemens trick to replace the explicit curvature by a certain double Poisson bracket that actually includes this linear part. And then, we just quantize the operator's presence in the Poisson bracket and replace the Poisson bracket by commutators. And then you have another option if you consider the Euclidean part as in terms of the three-dimensional, which is scalar, then you can quantize it to obtain what was called the curvature operator, which is a certain graph-preserving operator that was obtained from a regularization based on a Redshift approximation. Okay. On slide number 20, here I mentioned that straightforward quantization of the classical expressions usually leads to non-symmetric operators. Therefore, it is necessary to construct symmetric extensions without altering the classical limit of the operator. And usually, the simple idea is to use the adjoint operator. And I mentioned here some typical examples where we know that some of them, for example, admit the adjoint extensions, others are still not clear. But I will come back to some of those expressions later on for the discussion. Now, on slide number 21, may I discuss the special case where we have actually, where we have the disk constraint with the disk constraint present in the Hamiltonian. Then root transaction must be implemented as operator backing on the kinematic hybrid state. And then you are obliged now to go through the master constraint program, because as we know, we don't have a representation for the CA. And then this term, when taken in this form, such as QAD, CPCD, can be quantized similarly to the Euclidean part of data constraint. Okay. Now on next slide, number 22, I discussed some issues and possible treatment that could appear in defining the supraphysical Hamiltonian. So the form of the Hamiltonian defined size model depends on the chosen reference field, as I showed you in several examples. In general, the Hamiltonian may come with a classical fine constraint in its definition, and that needs to be implemented in the quantum theory. So usually there are two possibilities. So either work out the spectral analysis of the Hamiltonian operator as defined in the full physical Hilbert space, then define the reduced physical Hilbert as the completed span of the positive part of the Hamiltonian spectrum. This is, of course, as we know, is very difficult, if not say impossible so far, and therefore it is necessary to look for alternative options if there is any. So the second point is about modifying the form of the Hamiltonian. So here it's just about one simple trick. So if you consider your function h that appears in the scalar constraint, in the total scalar constraint, this function h is basically depending on some function q. And this q has a fixed sign. H has a fixed sign, and that implies that q must have some fixed sign in some subsector of the Hilbert of the phase space. Now the point is that you want to quantize this function q, and the question is how to impose this sign condition. So the trick is to first rewrite this q in terms of itself actually in the absolute value, so just averaging with the absolute value. And then you can define an extended function u that is that is also defined as a full Hilbert space. It doesn't have this restriction. It's just defined as the q plus the absolute value. And then you can notice easily that actually this function is coincides with the old q on this selected region of the phase space and vanishes outside of that region. So this is basically just a trick to get rid of the other sectors that are not selected in the phase space. At the end of the day, in the quantum theory, the constraint of the sign can be traded with basically the square root of a positive operator, in the sense that this absolute value of the function q is quantized as being the square root of q squared. So you trade basically a constraint that you don't know how to deal with a technical complication. That's what I come to in slide number 23. So square root implies, again, that we need to perform the complete spectral analysis of the operator under it. But it's not really that bad, because actually it is possible to use perturbation theory in that case. An example that I mentioned here is, for example, the classical analysis of the master constraint operator in APG. And that I refer you to the papers of Schiemann and in the construction of about the study of this semi-classical analysis. Another interesting idea on how to apply perturbation theory for Hamiltonian is something that I would like to come back to on slide 27, because just this is a new idea, we didn't test it yet, but it seems very interesting to at least investigate. Okay. So now let me summarize slide number 25. So What does the parameterization offer us? So it offers a unified setup to fit various models, let's say, and data suitable for quantization. And actually, that's something that I didn't mention before, but in this general form that I wrote of the Lagrangian and the reference key, there are actually some options that were not investigated yet, where actually you can consider other values for the functions A, B, and lambda, and you end up with other models that actually do not fit in those examples that I presented you before. Another thing is that space-time reference model, while it can be implemented in algebraic quantum gravity, is applying some certain modifications in the standard QG quantization. As I mentioned, it either could be some restriction on the Hilbert space, on the kinematic and Hilbert space, or you introduce some projection in your Hamiltonian so that you preserve the dissymmetry that you have. Third point is about time reference model that can be quantized in context of standard QG, but do not admit a consistent implementation in algebraic quantum gravity so far, and that's because in algebraic quantum gravity, you have to implement the bit constraint, but the operator that you obtain does not commute basically with your Hamiltonian, and therefore the Hamiltonian will not preserve the different values. The fourth point is that the physical Hilbert spaces, the quantum domain can be derived, that the physical Hamiltonian operators can be defined consistently in those models, and then that some relevant technical issues for the quantum evolution can be overcome, such as the constraints of the time in the Hamiltonian, for example. And a computable framework can be obtained in this sense that you can actually use perturbation theory in order to evaluate, for example, short-time evolution on certain states. Okay, so now let's go to the slide number 26 about what can we do next. Now that we have all these models, what can we really extract from them? So here I'd like to summarize just quickly and briefly some interesting points. First point is about the text of quantum dynamics. And here again, as mentioned before, it's just about approximate the evolution generated by chosen Hamiltonian on coherent space, for example, or semi-classical space. And this, as I said, can be done using in difficult cases, you can use perturbation theory. The second point is study the possibility of obtaining some classical dynamics with particular states. And in this way, I mean that if you construct a certain state with certain semi-classical properties, is it possible actually to derive a certain dynamic which would mimic semi-classical dynamics, at least at leading order? That's an interesting question to investigate. Now, the second point is locality, and this is a question that people ask me many times about in this case. So here I want just to briefly point out some subtleties about this question. So we have again this graph changing versus the graph preserving, and in the case of graph preserving, this is pretty much a satisfying option, since it mimics basically what happens in gauge theory on the lattice. So in this sense, it is already solving this problem of locality. However, in the case of graph chain, the question was always that it is perhaps that those regularizations are perhaps ultra-local, and that might be or might cause a certain problem. And here I wanted to say that actually, if you consider CV, which is basically, let's say, the path of the Hamiltonian that acts on a specific vertex V, may indeed seem local. But what about C, that is sum? And here what I mean is that if we think about gauge theory on the lattice, you have a fixed you consider, you have actually a fixed diagram, and if you consider a fixed graph, and you have your evolution given to you by certain Hamiltonian with this plaquette, and your graph is preserved in this evolution. And therefore, it is indeed, it would make sense to require that actually, if you want to create a certain monolocality, you are obliged somehow to go through this plaquette. However, in our case in MQG, we don't have this fixed background, and we don't have one single graph. If you start with a state with a single graph, it's basically a new active C, you have to basically produce a superpositional graph with changes basically everywhere. And at least from my perspective, it is not clear to me at least how we can judge actually if that or if such action can be considered as local or not. So this was just a quick comment about this this point when we have just this kind of regularization with CD. Now the second point that I want to mention is that actually in those deparameterized models, as I mentioned before, it happens that actually we have some constraints, for example, of time on the Hamiltonian, and precisely actually on the scalar constraints, such as here, for example, the absolute value. And this absolute value is basically translated in the quantum theory to some square root of the operator of the product of an operator with its adjoint. Now, if we think about it, again, this C is again a sum of the vertices. This product of C with the adjoint produces terms that are actually acting on two vertices at once, two different vertices at once. So, in some sense, with respect to this naive definition of locality, this operator is actually doing something more than just C, because it's basically acting in two different neighborhoods, and it's not restricted now to the neighborhood of one vertex. And I just wanted to mention here that if you consider the operator here, as I wrote, it's C dagger C, that is under the square root, and you put it in the vacuum theory, actually the kernel of such operator coincides with the kernel of the non-symmetric operator in this sense. So if in this case C dagger C contains any say ingredient of non-locality, then a priori it should be somehow also present in the case of the multimetric operator, in the case of the vacuum theory. But again, those are just they are merely say general arguments, but there is nothing really here to confirm as long as we don't really study observable in this case and their algebra, which is actually in the case, for example, of the space-time resonance model, it is very accessible. Okay, so next slide, number 27. This is the third point about perturbation theory for the Hamiltonian. This is basically about this other possibility that I mentioned before. So when you take the let's say this is just the scalar constraint, right? And then you write it, you actually define it in terms of the curvature operator, then you have the energy parameters in this expression that appears in, let's say, in different ways in front of the operator. So if you rewrite the C as I wrote in the first line on the right-hand side, then you have the curvature operator plus another term, and another operator multiplied by 1 over beta squared. And now the idea is, what if we consider a perturbation theory that is with respect to the parameter beta? So we know that the classical theory doesn't depend on beta, and the quantum theory, there is a possibility that actually there is a certain dependence that the correct quantum theory would select certain values of theta. But nevertheless, it is, so far, it is not really an obstacle to consider a certain, certain sectors where actually beta is pretty large. The point of that is that it allows us somehow to treat this Hamiltonian as being a perturbed operator. So we have the, let's say, the non-perturbed operator that is just the curvature operator, and then you have a certain of perturbation that is beta dependent. Now, why this is advantageous when the Noethian part is written in terms of the curvature operator? The reason is simply because this operator is graph-preserving. And it acts basically somehow closely to, in a way that is close to the action of the volume operator. And the advantage is that the spectral analysis is then much more accessible than in the case of a graph-changing Noethian part, because basically you will be working in finite dimensional space, which is just the intertwined space. And that's basically quite an advantage in the case when you want to compute evolution or investigate possible semiclassical regimes, because given a certain space, you have basically your intertwined space that are fixed, and basically you can proceed with a much detailed spectral analysis of the operator R, and then treat the additional, the rest, say, in the operator as a perturbation of this R. So that's basically, this is basically an option that seems to be available in the treatment of the Hamiltonian. On the next slide, this is slide number 28, it's my last point, so it's about coupling gravity to matter field. The aim is to construct a quantum model with all matter and gravity degrees of freedom are considered, so there is basically no reduction, okay, degrees of freedom. Now, what we can do is a priori try to quantize the Hamiltonian, including matter field part, so define the quantum dynamics of field on quantum geometry. Starting point example would be just consider the claim coding scalar field, possibly matters. And there was already in the literature many works about how to quantize a la polymer this Hamiltonian. So it's already somehow accessible. This model, this quantum model, is somehow accessible. It would be interesting to investigate possible modifications in the dynamics of matter fields that emerge in highly quantum regimes of geometry. And again, for further hopeful questions, to establish maybe some relation to standard quantum field theory and its background, and possibly grasping some understanding concerning the construction of the continuum limit in this quantum gravity. Okay. So to conclude, deparameterization is a powerful technical tool that allows us to confront conceptual and technical issues arising in fully constrained theory. LQG and ACG provide a clear and relatively clean program to help to quantize deparameterized models and define the corresponding physical Hilbert spaces. Perturbative treatment of the quantum dynamics is possible, which suggests a computable framework. The ambiguity in choice of the reference field is not an obstacle in investigating generic phenomenon properties that could or not manifest in LQG models. In this sense, again, what I mean here by generic is a priori that we expect that at least some phenomenon would not, I mean, the presence of certain phenomenon in the behavior would not depend on this choice of reference field. And my last point is including additionally standard matter fields in the model is a promising route. In one, understanding the interaction between quantum degrees of freedom of gravity and matter, and two, investigating new ideas to construct the continuum limit in quantum gravity. And thank you very much for your attention.
Questions? Okay, if there are no questions, let's thank the speaker again.